From Washington, VOA presents Issues in the News.
Welcome to Issues in the News. I'm Dan Revive, columnist for Newsday. And joining me on the panel via Skype are Linda Feldman, Washington Bureau Chief for the Christian Science Monitor, and Abdurrahim Fukara, Al Jazeera's Regional Director for the Americas. Welcome, everyone. Here are the issues. How President Donald Trump is handling the coronavirus crisis here in the United States. He's emphasizing how to restart the economy, even though the number of Americans infected and the number who die continues to grow. We'll talk about how coronavirus has become a political issue. Perhaps no surprise with America's election coming in early November. Former Vice President Joe Biden is the Democrat who will run against Trump. When and how will Biden start a big, high-impact campaign? What about international cooperation? When 40 nations and donors got together on developing vaccines, the United States and Russia were not represented. The online conference raised billions of dollars, but many in the world are wondering if the U.S. is determined to go it alone. Let's begin with President Trump and the coronavirus. Linda Feldman, you cover him every day. What was noteworthy from his trip to Arizona, including his visit to a factory where protective masks are made? Linda?
Well, there was a lot of betting before he went on whether he would actually wear a mask himself. He hasn't worn a mask in public. And given the flap the previous week over Vice President Pence's decision not to wear a mask at the Mayo Clinic, we kind of thought Trump would wear a mask, the idea being that it would model proper behavior and show people that they should be wearing masks to protect themselves and others from the virus. But in fact, Donald Trump didn't wear a mask, and neither did anybody in his entourage, even though the others at the mask production factory were wearing masks. So that's, I think, just a symbol of where the president is. He wants things to return to normal as much as possible. He wants people to be returning to work. And most important to him is to have an economy that could perhaps be on the rebound, so that he's running for re-election on a rebound message and not on an economic destruction message.
There's no question that the president is focusing now on restarting the economy. He says reopening the country. And Abdurrahim Fukara, the president gets to choose how he wants to communicate. He said he wants to be a cheerleader, even on this subject. So he's emphasizing the positive, not doom and gloom. What did you make of the decision to disband the White House Coronavirus Task Force, and then the next day, the president changing his mind? So there still will be a task force.
Well, obviously, President Donald Trump and his administration are not shy about courting controversy, whether it's about, you know, Pence not wearing a mask, and then that leading to the expectation that Trump, when he goes wherever, he would wear a mask, and he didn't. And then Trump, a while back, saying that basically he would stop doing the daily briefings because he didn't see the point of doing them because of accusations to the media that they're not doing right by him, except to pedal back and say, no, he will continue to do those briefings. And the same thing with, you know, the task force now. First, he said that it would come to an end. And then the next day, he said that it would actually continue because it was doing terrific a job. They're not afraid to court controversy. And for a good reason, from their point of view, the president has obviously a very loyal base. Whatever he does, they seem to be supportive of him, harking back to what he said during the campaign, that if he shot somebody on Fifth Avenue, his popularity would not suffer. That has become a way of governing for him, given the loyalty of his base.
Of course, never have we faced a crisis like this. It affects not only the United States, but the whole world. And Linda, as you listen to President Trump every day, is he trying to be a wartime leader? I noticed the word warriors the other day. He wants the American people to feel that they are warriors, which, of course, could rally the public.
Yes. No, he uses the war metaphor all the time. And we Americans are the soldiers trying to fight the common enemy. But that war metaphor only goes so far. This is not an enemy who will ever surrender. We have to defeat the enemy. And, you know, Donald Trump wants to fancy himself a general and a leader and somebody who can unify the country, perhaps, as past presidents have done at wartime, maybe, a latter-day Franklin Roosevelt. But he's not unifying the country. Since the day he was inaugurated, he has never come out with a message that seeks to unite all Americans. He is still making this about us versus them, whether it's us versus the virus or us as Americans against each other. He sees everything through a very partisan lens. He's fighting with Democrats. He's fighting with Nancy Pelosi, the Speaker of the House, and with Chuck Schumer, the Democratic leader in the Senate. And I think his goal isn't to win over any potentially undecided voters in battleground states. It's to rally his base of support and maybe even bring in some people who didn't vote in the last election and bring them to his side. So it's a tough one. We're not used to this after 9/11. Even during the financial crisis of 2008, 2009, there was a lot of bipartisan unity, and we're just not seeing that now.
Well, it is true that in April, Congress did approve trillions of dollars of economic aid to businesses of all sizes, supposedly with a focus towards small business, also a lot of extra money for unemployment benefits as the unemployment rate has soared in the United States. Tens of millions of people have lost their jobs. Abdurrahim, when you look at America's Congress, what do you see? Because the United States Senate is working. It's dominated by Trump's Republican Party. But the House of Representatives, with Democrats in the majority, it did not return to work. And certainly the White House wasn't encouraging the Democrats and House Speaker Nancy Pelosi to get involved. What's likely to happen? Will there be aid to states and city governments? So far, they say they've been cut out.
Well, first of all, let me say that the nature of the American political system is such that almost anything becomes politicized and becomes part of an election campaign, being just a few months away from the November election. This has been true of almost every administration, and the current one, Donald Trump's administration, is no exception to that, except that for my money, the polarization that we have seen over the last 3 years, I've been in America for about 20 years. I have never seen America being so polarized as it is now. And it's polarized about everything. It's incredible how there is polarization even about the issue of life and death now in terms of what's happening with the corona pandemic. You have people dying every single day, and you have a lot of Americans who are worried and afraid at the pace with the coronavirus deaths. And yet you have another section of Americans who are very supportive of the president at this particular point in time. Either they do not believe that the coronavirus risk is a real risk, or they are obviously so worried about their livelihood and about the state of the economy that they are willing to risk life and death to preserve a chance at having the economy come back so that they can continue to feed their families and loved ones. And Congress is not an exception here. I mean, if you look at what the Democrats, as you said, and what the Republicans are trying to do, you have the Senate going back to work, and you have the Senate being dominated by the Republicans, and you have the House being led by Democrats, still not sure whether going back to Congress is the right thing to do. And when it comes to relief, we've seen different batches of it being voted by Congress to help Americans, businesses, small businesses, medium businesses, to help them waddle through the crisis. Some of that relief has got to its destination, but a lot of Americans, a lot of small businesses, medium businesses continue to complain that they have not really received anything. And then you have the other layer of the polarization, Mitch McConnell, for example, saying that states that need help because of corona, because of the coronavirus, can be helped by Congress, but that should not be used as an excuse for states that had failed policies before the coronavirus crisis to use the crisis to get money from the federal government to save their economies. It's amazing how everything a few months away from the November election is so highly politicized.
So, Linda, what's likely to happen, right, as we keep our eye on the White House and on Congress? There does seem to be a consensus that that the economy still needs liquidity, still needs money, and the Federal Reserve Board acting independently, but, you know, they've been quite cooperative with what the Trump administration wants to do, easing back on interest rates, making it easier to borrow, lots of money in the economy. So does Congress still have a strong role in what's going to happen next?
Well, it does have a strong role, and I should have pointed out before that they have come together in the early going of this crisis to approve a combined total of over $3 trillion. In aid to hospitals and medical workers and in acquisition of equipment, and then in the largest sum of money in payments to businesses and to individuals just to keep the economy going in some fashion. But there's an agreement that more is needed, but what we're seeing is, on the part of each party leadership, is an effort to attach items that reflect long-term goals. And so you have the Democrats wanting to improve the social welfare safety net, for example, on food stamps, food aid to people, in the hopes that that those improvements will stick after the crisis passes.
I will turn you back to that. Let me just take a break and I'll pick up that thought. Let's just take a brief break. Issues in the News is coming to you from the Voice of America in Washington. If you'd like to download the program, it's free on iTunes. One way to find it, just click on the iTunes tab on VOA's website, voanews.com. Now back to our panel, Linda Feldman, Washington Bureau Chief for the Christian Science Monitor, and Abdurrahim Fukara, Al Jazeera's Regional Director for the Americas. I'm Dan Raviv. Linda, you were saying that when it comes to Congress and thinking about what might happen next, especially in economic aid during this coronavirus crisis, the Democrats and Republicans have different goals.
Exactly. I think ultimately they will come to some kind of agreement, but we're in the bargaining phase. So you have the Democrats who want to improve the safety net even as they provide more immediate aid to individuals and to businesses and to hospitals. And then the Republicans, their goal as part of any new aid package is that it has to include liability protections for hospitals and healthcare providers and businesses that reopen. Republicans, one of their constant issues is to protect businesses from lawsuits. So we're in the middle of a negotiation. I think they will come together because the American people of both parties expect Congress. This is what Congress is for. This is what government is for, is to help in a time of crisis.
Let's think about the international picture. Abdurrahim, I'm just thinking about, for instance, the call by some human rights groups, some aid agencies, former U.S. diplomats have been urging President Trump even to ease sanctions on countries considered hostile to the United States, Iran, Venezuela, maybe North Korea, ease the sanctions, help those countries through this health crisis, which, of course, could change international relations. Do you think something's going to happen?
Well, let's start with North Korea first. I mean, North Korea, although it actually shares a border with China, has not reported any pandemic infections or deaths, which is obviously very unusual. And therefore, for people calling for the administration to ease sanctions on North Korea, that may sit oddly with the fact that, you know, the North Koreans have not reported any deaths or infections. But we know that the President Donald Trump has been trying to get things going with the North Koreans. And he has a particular liking for North Korea and for seeking a deal with the North Koreans. Iran seems to be in a much worse situation. I mean, Iran, right from the word go, has been ravaged by the coronavirus. But the position of the U.S. administration has consistently been, look, the Iranian government is trying to blame the ravages of the coronavirus and the inability to deal with those ravages adequately on U.S. sanctions. U.S. sanctions, Pompeo, for example, has repeatedly said U.S. sanctions are not to blame because the Iranians do have money which they could have used to deal with the coronavirus. But instead of using that money for that purpose, they're using it to support their proxies in the Middle East or to buy weapons or to launch rockets and so on. And so that's where we are now. At the end of the day, the Iranians, the people, not the government, obviously, in any sanctions situation, it's the people, it's the civilians who pay the price, while the shenanigans continue between the regime in Tehran and the U.S. government. It's probably, in a normal situation, it would be bad PR for the United States to maintain rigid sanctions on a country like Iran under such circumstances. But we know that the Trump administration has its own unconventional ways of dealing with PR and PR results. The issue of Venezuela, if I may just very quickly wrap up, is a little bit also more complicated. On the one hand, we have, you know, a serious case of the pandemic in Venezuela, but we have had over the last couple of days or so this suggestion by the U.S. government that if Maduro, the leader of Venezuela, were to accept a power-sharing mechanism with the opposition, then sanctions would be alleviated. But Maduro has obviously categorically shot that in the middle of a big talk about a possible coup, which Maduro is accusing the United States of having fomented in Venezuela. It failed. The U.S. government is denying that.
Indeed, a still mysterious incident in which at least two U.S. citizens apparently were arrested by Venezuela, charged with trying to foment a coup, and as you say, in the middle of the coronavirus crisis. Linda Feldman, as you cover the White House, you see the official readouts of President Trump's phone calls with foreign leaders. And so on the one hand, the president is focused on making America a success, even in this pandemic. But he did speak, I noticed, to the presidents of South Korea and Vietnam, from South American countries, of course, his friend, Britain's Prime Minister Boris Johnson, who recovered from being very ill with coronavirus. So the U.S. is at least talking with other governments. So, you know, has this become a reason for Donald Trump and foreign leaders to pull together, you know, and come together on this, or it's been divisive even on the world stage?
It's a perhaps the ultimate example of the need for a global coming together. But with Donald Trump, that's not happening. He's still all about America first. And he's using this actually as an opportunity to demonstrate his own perceived dominance of the world. And he will often claim, for example, that the U.S. is number one in testing for the virus. That may be true in the numbers, but as a proportion of the American population, that's not true. But he persists in repeating that we're number one. He also will often say in his discussions with foreign leaders that the U.S. has offered assistance to those countries in the form of ventilators. Of course, it has to be a friendly country. Now he's saying we have all the ventilators we need and we can now send them to other countries in the world. So he's trying to stand astride the world stage and be the, quote, leader of the world, even as the U.S. has the most deaths and the highest caseload in the world.
And the United States pulled all of its financial support from the World Health Organization, saying that it was gullible and believing false information, according to Washington, false information from the Chinese government. Abdulrahim, even as China says, by the way, that in many ways its economy is reopening, and other countries in Europe, for instance, are easing back on the restrictions, feeling their economy has to get going. What's your feeling here in the United States? How long will it take till we approach a more normal life where the children are going to school and maybe we can go to restaurants or maybe even movie theaters? What's your feeling?
I mean, it really is hard to predict how long this is going to last. But, you know, I think all reasonable assessments seem to indicate that we're in this for the long haul. People in Europe or even here in the United States may be itching to go back to work. Some of them may, in fact, actually even may be successful at going back to work. But the overall picture continues to be quite bleak. I mean, there was that report in the New York Times a few days ago, citing official documents saying that they expect June to be the cruelest month. So maybe one of the cruelest months, who knows? If you look at the plans for the DNC and the RNC, things seem to be in flux. Not sure whether the DNC will actually even take place in the summer. And that's taking us into June, August already. So, you know, there are a lot of indications that this is going to last much longer than we originally anticipated. And then you have fears, Dr. Fauci and other medical experts who are saying, unless we do this, we go back to work carefully and gradually, there may be a second wave of COVID-19. So even when we're talking about September, October, there are still questions. But at the end of the day, I think everyone has a hope that this will end soon. Everyone is getting really tired of being locked at home with kids not being able to go to school and people not being able to actually go out and not just make a living, just to do simple things like having a cup of coffee somewhere. Between hope and fear, I think my expectation is that we will continue to waddle for some time yet, at least until September.
And remembering that a source of hope could be all that medical research taking place at universities, by government laboratories around the world, pharmaceutical companies, almost a race to develop a vaccine that could inoculate all of us, you know, in theory, all around the world against this coronavirus. And of course, a therapeutic, meaning a medication that would help people who get the virus and have been hospitalized and maybe improve the survival rates a lot. Let me just move to U.S. politics in the couple of minutes remaining here. Linda, former Vice President Joe Biden, he's the Democrat who'll be running against Donald Trump. But Biden's been staying at home for his own health and safety in Wilmington, Delaware, trying to run a presidential campaign from the basement, but we expect one of the big headlines sometime soon will be his choice of a running mate who will run for vice president with him, and he's promised that will be a woman. And I just want to mention that this could be kind of a strange issue, because there's a woman who worked for him when he was a senator, and she claims almost 30 years ago that Biden sexually assaulted her. Do we find some female Democrats are now condemning Biden, and it's become a very difficult issue for him?
Well, it's a tricky issue for him. And among elected Democratic women, I'm not seeing anybody condemning him. I'm seeing a rallying around Joe Biden, saying that there are problems with this woman's story. She does have people supporting her story that then Senator Biden sexually assaulted her. But there are also plenty of reasons to doubt the story and to see a political motivation in there. So what we're seeing in terms of women's response is women who support Bernie Sanders, who was the runner-up for the Democratic nomination, some of them, including top people from the Sanders campaign, have been leading the charge to, quote, believe women, which is the rallying cry of the Me Too movement, the movement to fight sexual harassment and sexual assault by men against women. The internal Democratic conflict over this is interesting and problematic for Joe Biden, because, of course, he needs as many Democrats as possible to support him in November, just as Donald Trump is fighting to rally his party behind him. So Joe Biden had already said he would put a woman on the ticket with him, and I don't see that changing. But what we're seeing now is the various perceived shortlisters competing and doing virtual events with Joe Biden as he sits in his basement. You know, people like Senator Elizabeth Warren and Senator Amy Klobuchar and Stacey Abrams from Georgia, fighting hard for public attention, both to audition for Joe Biden and just to promote their own political cause.
As the Biden campaign gets underway, obviously you'll hear a lot more about it on this program in the weeks and months ahead. But for now, that's all the time we have for Issues in the News. Thanks to Linda Feldman, Washington Bureau Chief of the Christian Science Monitor, and Abdurrahim Fukara, Al Jazeera's Regional Director for the Americas. This program is produced by the Voice of America. I'm Dan Ravine.